On this 15th day of June 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path. Text number 22. Vishaya binivesena Natmanam vedanaparam
Natmanam vedanaparam
Vrikshajivakaya jivan Vyartam vastreva yakshvasan.
Vyartam vastreva yakshvasan.
Because of absorption in sense gratification, one cannot recognize himself or others. Living uselessly in ignorance like a tree, one is merely breathing just like a bellows. Purport. Just as trees, having no means of defending themselves, are always being cut down, similarly, the conditioned souls are constantly being cut down by the cruel laws of nature, which impose innumerable miseries, culminating in sudden death. Although foolish people think they are helping themselves and others, they actually do not know their own identity, nor the identities of their so-called friends and relatives. Absorbed in gratifying the senses of the external body, they spend their lives uselessly without spiritual profit. This useless lifestyle can be transformed into a perfect life simply by chanting the holy names of God in Krishna consciousness as recommended by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Om jnana timarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chukshu unmiditam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, this is part of a whole series of verses, which I'd like to review. Similar to the verses, as we've been pointed out, in the second chapter, first canto, starting Dhyayato Vishayan Pungsa. The very word Vishaya is used here in this verse. And what Krishna is describing here is kind of an end point of degradation. Starting text 19. One who accepts material sense objects as desirable certainly becomes attached to them. From such attachment, lust arises. And this lust creates quarrel among men. From quarrel arises intolerant anger, followed by the darkness of ignorance. This ignorance quickly overtakes a man's broad intelligence. A person bereft of real intelligence is considered to have lost everything. Deviated from the actual purpose of his life, he becomes dull, just like a dead person. And in today's verse, because of absorption and sense gratification, one cannot recognize himself or others. Living uselessly in ignorance, like a tree, one is merely breathing, just like a bellows. So this analogy is a famous verse in the second canto, I believe. Tadavak king the jivanti, king karanti bastra king nas vasantyuta, nakaranti namehanti king grami pashavo pare. Which is the same idea, but it's in the form of a question. Do the trees not live? Do the bellows not breathe? In the village, do the animals not eat and discharge semen? So the idea is this is not the life of a human being. In other words, just living and breathing and eating and having sex is, you don't need a human form for that. Human life has a higher purpose. So this useless life in absorption and sense gratification is a very nice line in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which says the same thing. Agayur indriyaramo mogang parta sajivati. So it's remembering this. Agayur, a sinful life of indriyaramo, sense gratification, is useless. Mogam parta sajivati. In the ninth chapter, mogasha, moga karmano, moga jnana vajetasa. Right? Those who have taken shelter of the external energy, of the bewildering energy of the Lord, they don't recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't recognize anything. basically accept their own needs, their own desires, and whatever extensions they have in this world. And for such people, all their hopes, all their aspirations for happiness in this world, security, fame, you know, are bewildered. In other words, frustrated. Mogasha, mogakarmano. Their activities ultimately come to nothing. They don't have any meaning. And their knowledge is so-called knowledge. It's really covered by the modes of nature. Rakshasi masarim chaya. Krishna says these are on the levels of the rakshasas and the demons. You know, mohinim, prakriti mohinim shita, those who have taken shelter of the external energy, by this very of activity of being over-absorbed in the senses. So this is the condition that the living entity finds himself in this material world. We've come here because we allowed our consciousness to be diverted from Krishna and absorbed in the material energy. And this whole sojourn we've had, our stay here, in body after body after body, the same modus operandi is there. Whether in a human body or a demigod's body or dog body or an ant body, the mind, there's a mind, even a rudimentary mind, even in the insects, is absorbed in the externals, the senses. You know, whatever senses you happen to have, there's a corresponding object out there to be attracted to. The ant has its sugar, you know. Somehow or other, they know when you spill some sugar in your kitchen. And if you leave it there, there'll be a whole line. They have a whole kirtan party going on, a festival, you know. It's feast time, you know, and they cooperate and they bring it in, you know. That's their highest point of existence, eating sugar. That's not, you know, and it's tragic. That's the same soul in that ant that's in Brahma, you know. But it comes down to that degradation point due to absorption and sense gratification. Because by that mode of passion, or that kama, covers the knowledge, covers more and more and more. Isn't it? Avritam gyanam etena gyanino nityavainana kamarupena kondana dushpadena alenacha. This is the third chapter. The real enemy of the soul is material desire, kama, headed by sex but expanding into everything else. And inevitably, as Krishna explains here, that results in frustration and anger when something or someone is frustrating your ever-expanding material desires. You can never be satisfied. There's always that principle. I need, even if you have a very nice situation, you're wealthy, you have a nice wife, you have a girlfriend, you have all the sense great, you have nice food, everything, you're beautiful. How long will it last? There's always the fear that she's going with someone else, he's going with someone else. What's going to happen to my money? All these taxes I have to pay, you know. So many things, right? Your health, you know. To get wealthy in this world usually takes some time. So by the time you have your wealth down, unless you inherit it, you're 40, 45, 50, old age is staring you in the face. You know? This is what happens with the sense gratifiers. It brings great fear. There's a nice verse by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He wrote this song, you know this song, Bhaja Goldra Makan and Nakunja Vidhum, right? Bhaja Goldra Makan and Nakunja Vidhum. Vidhum means moon. The Godruma Kanana Kunja Vidhum means the moon of the groves and gardens of Godrumadweep. This is Lord Chaitanya. And he appeared in that island of the nine islands when it was their islands. So he says, Ramani Jana Sangusukam Chasake Chadame Bhayadam Purushataharam Hadinama Sadara Samatamati Bhaja Godruma Kanana Kunja Vidhum. Very sweet verse. So he's saying, Ramani, young girls. Jana, Sangha, Sukham, Chasake, oh friend, Sakha, Sakha. The pleasure that comes from associating with young girls, or young boys on the other side, but young girls. Ramani, Jana, Sangha, Sukham. There's a happiness there, there's no question. Chadame, after some time, Bhayadam, gives great fear. Fear comes because you're getting older, she's getting older, you know, the time is going, and what happened to that idyllic moment when we first met. When, you know. Anyway. Chadame Bayadam and Purushartha Haram. It steals away the ultimate goal of human life. You completely forget about that. You know, that everything is in the moment. Everything is, you know, you're obsessed. Your mind is completely bewildered. Pramada. Pramada. Maddened. So this is the dangers. You know, when that's all you have is the focus of that. This is the lesson to us. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur singing. Well, what's the alternative? That's all we know. Sense gratification and all the expansions and varieties. No, he says. Harinama sudha rasa matta matir. Make your mind intoxicated, maddened. You're going to be mad one way or another. You're going to be mad for sex and enjoyment, or you're going to be mad for Krishna. So, harinama sudha rasa matta matir. Make your mind absorbed in and intoxicated with, maddened. Harinama sudha rasa. The mellows of Harinam Sankirtan. This is the only hope. The only way. Harinama, Harinama, Harinama. So, actually it says like that. There's a verse. Yogya agyana mattam bhuvanam dayalur ulagyanap yakarot pamatta. Lord Chaitanya, Swaprema sampat sudiyad bhutehyam Shri Krishna Chaitanyam amum papadye. So, people have become agyana mattam. They've been maddened with ignorance in this age. Right? Yo agyana mattam bhuvanam dayalu. But out of his compassion, dayalu, the merciful Lord Chaitanya, yo agyana mattam bhuvanam dayalu ullaga yanapya karotpa mattam. So he lifted them up. He's delivering the people of this age. But he's making them mad again. With what? Swaprema sampat sudiyad bhutehyam. Swaprema sampat, the treasure of love for himself, because it's Krishna doing this. Swaprema sampat, and also the prema that he himself has for Krishna. You understand? Swaprema sampat, sudayad bhutehyam, the wonderful nectarian treasure of love for Krishna. He's making him mad for that. So the people are mad. We're mad after sense gratification. But that madness produces suffering, illusion, and misery. But the madness for Krishna is just float. In an ocean of nectar. Even though all around you there's so much, you know, distress. We shouldn't forget that, you know, Lord Chaitanya's movement grew. It was born and it grew in the midst of the occupation of northern India, you know, of India by the Muslims. You know, when Lord Chaitanya went from place to place, sometimes there would be, you know, tax collectors and this and that. You know, he would charm them and get through there. But it was a dangerous time. The Goswamis, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they were under the heel, you know, they were under the control of Nawab Hussain Shah, you know. And they were coerced. They were coerced. Don't forget that. They were coerced into serving in that government. They regarded themselves as having been fallen, you know, because they were associating. But they were coerced. They threatened to persecute the Brahmins and the Vaishnavs unless Rupa and Sanatana helped to rule. Just like the English. How did they ever rule India with a few thousand, you know, administrators? By coercing some of the leading intellectuals and influential Indians to rule over everybody else. You see? So this is, Nawab did the same thing. But the point I'm making is that it wasn't all, you know, it wasn't the heavenly planet in there. There were great difficulties, even during the time of Lord Chaitanya. To practicing devotional service. Right there in Navadvip, the Qazi, the sheriff. And Qazi means sheriff, basically. You know, he was persecuting the devotees. So the idea is that in any circumstance, even in this modern day, even in California, 2011, or in Africa, 2011, one can be Krishna conscious. One can transcend the difficulties and taste the nectar of Krishna consciousness. That's the alternative to Vishyeshu Gunadhyasa. This is text 19. It describes. And what happens here? Why does it create the Kali? Now, the emphasis here, Kali means quarrel. The emphasis in Krishna's statement here, which is parallel to that in the second chapter, Dayato Vishyam Pungsa, clearly, is that he emphasizes the social aspect. When Krishna says, kama krodha vijayate, in the second chapter, lust breeds anger, right? Well, what does that mean? Anger means there's somebody else involved, right? You're not just angry at the universe. You're angry because someone is impeding your sense gratification, or took it away, right, or threatened it somehow or other. So that's what he's emphasizing here. That by too much absorption in the object of the senses, then this ever-expanding desire for them eventually conflicts with someone else's ever-expanding desire, right? Somebody steals something. He steals your car, you know? You know, you're frustrated and angry and depressed. The depression comes when you turn the anger inside because you can't express it because it's the same emotion. But, and then that becomes chronic. You know, you don't even know what you're depressed about, but you're just depressed. You know, because you've internalized that. So it's a slippery slope down. It's a syndrome that takes you down by absorption in the mind and in sense objects. And as soon as this anger and quarrel occurs, then it just escalates. Everything escalates from quarrel, intolerable anger, followed by the darkness of ignorance. See, anger is really in the mode of ignorance. You know this, and you realize this is why they have manslaughter. You know, because someone can get angry and he loses his usual intelligence, the usual checks and checks on your impulses. You know, what I think Freud called the superego or something like that. That you lose that because anger takes over. It just burns, you know, and says, oh, I didn't know. Why did I do this? Okay, so it's manslaughter. It's not murder. It's not premeditated. Premeditated means in the coolness, you know, you're completely thinking, planning it out. And it's the worst punishment. That means you're bad to the core, right? This is just like anger took over. But all of this, you know, whether it's premeditated or not, it's all heavy, heavy conditioning. And this anger overtakes a man's broad intelligence. So again, to emphasize, Krishna's emphasizing in the second chapter, buddhi yoga. Bhakti yoga means buddhi yoga. To link up your intelligence to Krishna. You know, if your intelligence is purified by hearing and chanting, then everything else follows. The intelligence guides the mind, guides the senses. You know, so that's why I encourage you. If you think about it, the times when you're feeling a little happiness in Krishna consciousness, it means that your intelligence is fully engaged. You know, if you're looking at the deity, you know, and you're really focusing, and you're seeing all of the variety, and you're appreciating the beauty and the colors and everything, and you're also thinking, you may be thinking, you know, of something you read about Radha and Krishna. You know, you're thinking of the flow of the flute. I remember I read a verse about the flute. How wonderful that flute sound is, charming everybody and Brahma. You see what I mean? Your intelligence, your memory is involved. Memory is the intelligence. Then you appreciate the deity so much more. Otherwise, your mind could be a million miles away. Your intelligence is thinking of something else, right? You're still getting some benefit, but you're not absorbed. And that's true of the sound, too. The sound is our main basis of our Krishna consciousness, hearing and chanting. So the more the intelligence is absorbed. When I worked on the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, I got a chance to read some of the comments of Sridhar Swami and the others, Jiva Goswami, Madhvacharya, Sanatana Goswami, on each verse. And you could see how, absorbed they were in each word. Oh, this word means that. Sanatana Goswami expanded the meaning. You know, what does it mean? Let's give you an example. Barha pidam natavata vapu karne yo karni karam. This is a famous verse from the 21st chapter of the 10th canon. I could call the Venu Gita, famous Venu Gita. So this is kind of an introductory verse. And it just describes, beauty of Krishna as he's entering the forest. The gopis are home, they're doing their chores, and they're thinking of Krishna as he's entering, and they're completely absorbed in him there. You know, and they're describing. So, Barha Pidam, he's wearing this peacock plume on his head. Natavada Vapu, he has the form of the most graceful dancer, And Karni O Karni Karam. So carne o carne cauda means is a certain flower that's very fragrant and ornamental, that's often used for over your ear as an ear ornament. So it's called the carne cauda. So on his ears, he has a carne cauda. So now he gets into that one word, you know. Is he wearing it over his right ear or his left ear or both ears? You know? And he gets into this whole thing that if he has it over both ears, and this is more indicative of, you know, the conjugal attraction or something like that. There's a whole thing about it. There's a whole culture just built over, you know, whether you're wearing the flower on both ears or left ear. You know? You can imagine, this is absorption, you know? And when you read those things and you chant the verse and you think of all of that stuff comes up, you know? That's a deep appreciation, you know. So that's a function of the intelligence. You're applying your intelligence, you know. Krishna gives you more intelligence. Tesham satadi yuktanam bhajatam pritipur tadami buddhi yogam tam. He gives you more. So that's just the opposite here. Here it says you lose, overtakes a broad intelligence. The intelligence becomes covered. It becomes like an animal's intelligence. How figure out how to kill or dominate this entity to get more for myself, you know, or how can I increase, you know, that's demonic intelligence. So, you know, the modes can affect the intelligence, the mind, the senses, everything. Lust covers your knowledge by infecting the intelligence, the mind, and the senses. This is also third chapter. Indriyani mano buddhi syadastana muchate etaiva moha yaktesha jnanamavitadehinam. Vimohiti means completely bewildered by this. Life after life after life. So this is what Krishna is describing. And in today's verse, he says, you know, how many lives have we passed in so many species of trees, insects, animals? Now we've come to this human form of life. Don't, you know, act in the same way due to that the vestiges of all of this material desire. So that again, you're simply living on the level of the trees and plants and animals, and therefore you'll get that body, and you stay in this ocean of ignorance. So, you know, very strong words here. But the Bhagavatam doesn't just describe it this way; it also gives us the means to avoid this disaster, this calamity. The greatest calamity occurs in material life. When we think everything is fine. You know, I'm good, you're good. I mean, how many times do you hear that? You try to give someone a book, I'm good.
100 times a day.
You know, it means, no thanks, I'm fine, I don't need it. You need it, you know. you're burning alive in a forest fire, and I've come here, you know, with the soothing words of the Vedas to save you, and you don't think you need it. This is Maya's, you know, trick. Is that she not only drags you down, but she covers you. You know, there's these two energies. Covers your knowledge. So you don't know you're down. So this is the great value of hearing genuine Shastra from genuine, acharyas, sadhus, is that they cut. The words can be harsh, but it's for the good of the soul. You know, just like the cutting of the surgeon is for the benefit of the patient. So, you know, basically, you know, this philosophy, we approach people, we don't preach like this, but it's like that. Everything you think is wrong. Everything you believe, your entire aspiration of your life is leading you to hell. Now give it up. You know, now you can't say that outright because people will think, what do you mean? I have all this, you know. But that's really what it comes down to. And for those of us who at least know that theoretically and are on the path to appreciate it and realize it, you know, we have a responsibility to find the ways and means to attract people so that they'll begin to realize that. And that's why book distribution is so important, as well as holy name distribution. There is a verse I discovered fairly recently in the sixth canto. I read it many years ago but forgot. You know, there's so much knowledge here. This is spoken by Chitraketu to Sankarshan. Chitraketu is a wonderful story. You know, here's a perfect example. He was absorbed in the desire for a son. Great king with millions of queens, couldn't have a son. You know, so for a king, That's the disaster. What am I going to pass on? You know, what's this use of all of this kingdom if I can't pass it on to my beloved son? You know. So that was completely covering his knowledge. That's all he thought about day and night. You know, I can't have a son, can't have a son. So was it Angiramuni came? I think Angiramuni came and said, okay. So take this milk, this empowered milk, feed it to your favorite queen, and she'll conceive a son. Oh, thank you, great sage. You've fulfilled my prayers. You know, that's what he was praying for. But here's the name. I'm giving you the name for the son. What's the name? Harshashoka. Harshashoka. I mean, that's a name for every son. That's a name for it. Harshashoka means jubilation, lamentation. That's the name. So it describes it. Oh, he's thinking, all right, you know, he'll be my son, give me so much joy. But then, like all sons, he grows up and causes his parents some grief by, you know, doing this, doing that, a little, you know, independent. That's okay, no problem. Little did he know. So he gives the special sweet rice or whatever it is to his queen, and she gets pregnant. Oh, thank you, God, you know. And so, of course, she's now even more the favorite queen. All the other queens are ignored. And gradually, she gives birth, and he favors that queen. She's the mother of his apple of his eye, the son, you know. So just like it says here, that it creates quarrel among men, or women, and from lust creates quarrel among men. So these other queens become envious. They become mad with disappointment and anger at him and at the queen and everything. So what do? Who knows?
Kill the son?
Yeah. They I think, poison the son. In the little cradle there. Oh, so the nurse comes in and sees it's all blue. The kids, she says, "Oh my God!" So she thinks maybe they'll blame me, the nurse. You know, so she runs to Chituketu and tells him, and you know, he's just mad with disappointment. The shoka has kicked in. The harsha was there, now the shoka, the lamentation. So there's this dramatic scene, you know, he's falling unconscious, he's going through the hall to see his dead son, beating his head against the wall, his hair is scattered, he's falling on the ground, the queen is lamenting, wailing, you know. The other queens are lamenting, wailing, you know, faking it. And anyway, so it goes on like that, and there's the son, you know. Oh, God. You know. So at that point, you know, they're standing around the cradle with the dead son. Who comes?
Narada Muni
comes. Now, it's explained, he couldn't come before because Chituketu wasn't ready. He wasn't receptive. Now, you know, in this lamentation state, he's open, you know. So what does he do? He brings the son back to life by his mystic power. And the son starts preaching to the father. Well, whose son am I really? You know, I've had so many fathers, so many mothers. And I was there for my allotted time, and, you know, destiny, providence has taken me away. So get it together, basically, he's saying to his father, you know. So this is quite a shocking development. And he takes in the knowledge, and he becomes detached. And he, you know. So Narada teaches him a mantra, the chant, to realize God. So he chants it, and he's so sincere, and he's so fixed and intense that in 7 days he gets the darshan of Sankarshan. You know, he gets. And so this is one of the prayers. And forgive me, but I haven't got it memorized. It's a very odd meter. The meter is not regular. In fact, it's these little bits of prose when you analyze it. And I forgot what it says, the Sanskrit. But what it means is that, oh my dear Lord, if someone hears your name even once, they're freed from samsara. Yes, if they would hear you. I mean, you hear so many times. If one chants even once, then they'll be free from so much sin, basically liberated. But the problem is that they got to go on sinning again, and then they get, you know. But here he's saying even once. So I thought this is a great verse. For Sankirtan, for Harinam Sankirtan, or any Sankirtan. Even just once hearing, you know. So here we are, we're enjoying chanting the holy name, but if you just go out and chant, you know, and also it's an impetus to chant loudly, you know, on the street, because these plants and the animals, they're also hearing. They also benefit. But here it's specifically referring to human beings, I believe, in that verse. So that is the alternative, the only alternative. It's all a question of the mind. When the mind is absorbed in the vishaya, you know, then that mind is your worst enemy. That mind drags you to hell. That mind causes you so much suffering. You see? But by coming in contact with this knowledge from the Bhagavatam and all of the adjuncts of the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, if we are a little bit receptive and we take part in the process, everything really begins when you start chanting. You know, then everything starts to make sense. Otherwise, you can come up with a million different arguments. You know, I read this here, I read this there. This is your idea. This is just Hinduism. You know, but if you start chanting Hare Krishna, then from within your heart, Krishna is purifying your intelligence. So you see, oh yeah, this makes complete sense. And so, you know, that's really why this is the Yuga Dharma. There's no other way, because the age is so crazy. You know, and with each generation or each year, let's say, you know, the vishaya become more attractive practically. We went to the Apple store. We got him an iPod. He's now part of the iPod Sangha. Ajami. Now I have to see if we can learn how to touch properly. So teach him. But the Apple store, I've never been to one of these stores. I've never been to this UTC. I've been here 22 years. I haven't been to this Heavenly Planet UTC. And they build it in such a way, you walk in there, your parking is far away, so you walk in and it's supposed to be like a little Heavenly Planet. Right? Oh, I want this, I want this. You see, everything is coming at you. And you know, and I have my card, yeah, I already owe so much, but let me buy whatever I want. You know? So this Apple store is so popular. We tried to call them up, they don't even answer the phone. They don't need to. You know, it's filled with people. The other store, this is a recession. It's practically a depression out there. And the Apple store is filled, you know. And not only filled with customers, there's almost as many helpers. You go into a CVS store, you can't find anyone. Where's the toothpaste? You know, they don't hire because they're trying to, you know. But the Apple, they're making money hand over. Why is that? Because they're very skilled at grabbing your attention, you know, and giving you a gadget that's a little better than the last gadget you bought from them. So you throw the other one away, or you sell it on eBay and you get another one. And I was watching, you know, everywhere there's people, you know, with their heads in the screen, you know, these very bright and wonderful screen colors. And there are these kids. There's one that was just for kids, it says. Big screen. And they had, the kid is absorbed, you know, and there's something going on. They're trying to teach the kid the alphabet. But they have like this cartoony type thing going on. And this kid, she wasn't smiling. She was as serious as a 35-year-old, you know, doing his taxes or something. This is the kid. And like 3 feet away is another kid on another screen playing another game. Instead of playing together, you know, they don't even know what's going on. This is, you know, this is demonic. But they didn't have that 25 years ago. What I'm saying is that the demons, they create more and more varieties of intense sense gratification. The drugs, designer drugs, they can't keep up with it. You know, something is illegal, I make a little tweak, it's a different drug. You know, so the point I'm making is that this material world is a creation of Maya and Maya's agents. Those who are serving Maya, that's the demons. They're her agents. And so it's hopeless. If you don't chant Hare Krishna, if you don't develop attraction for the holy name and Krishna consciousness, then your senses will immediately go wild. There's no Vedic culture or anything to give you even some moral structure. It's all breaking down very, very rapidly. So this is the only hope. This is the only island of sanity, really. But it requires a tivra bhakti. It has to be intense. If we become superficial or lackadaisical in our sadhana, then we will be prey to the allurements of the external energy. So that nishta platform, the anartha nivritti, meaning this is part of the stairway to heaven, you know, stairway to Goloka, Rupa Goswami describes the process. It's very scientific. It's all very scientifically arranged. This is what's so wonderful, is that, yes, you come in contact, you have a little bit of faith, a little bit of interest, and by sangha, you know, by good sangha, good association, your faith is increased. Okay, all right, let me try the chanting. You know, I see the devotee, you know, devotees are so peaceful and happy. I'm not. They have something I want. All right, let me try the process. You know. So as soon as you start chanting, then the purification begins. And a very important step, initiation, where you become, you know, take vows and become fixed in the sadhana. That's the whole idea. You're committed. And then, you know, on Arjuna Vritti, the process is going on. More and more purification. It's just a process of purification. The natural state is to be completely blissful in serving Krishna in the spiritual world. And then to come to the point, you know, of Anartana Vritti, when everything is almost destroyed to nil, that Nishta platform described in the second chapter of First Canto, then you're very fixed. You know, there's no question. Krishna is God, I'm his eternal servant, bhakti is the process to realize him, and on I go. No one can deviate you. Very nice platform. It's kind of like the Madhyama Bhakta platform, you know, strong Madhyama Bhakta. So that's, you know, it works for everyone, you know, provided they have enough, you know, that they haven't damaged their senses in their brain so much that they can't concentrate or can't bring to bear. It's sadly true, but it's a fact. You know, I've been here so long, you see so many people come, so many people go, that Kali Yuga, this modern society, is so damaging, you know, that you can damage the machine. It's, after all, machine, the human body, so that it doesn't work anymore. You can't concentrate. Basically, it means you can't concentrate. The senses are too blown out. The neurons are too, you know, the circuits in your brain sometimes. So sadly, you know, you can't get the taste for the holy name. So if we're not at that state, and we're able to, we should pursue it. The most valuable thing we have is the interest and the taste for chanting and hearing. We reserve that. When we talk about the 10 offenses, or every one of them, you know, what happens is it damages your taste. It means that you can't chant anymore. You're not interested. There's other things to do, you know. What am I wasting my time here? You know, I mean, this happens. If Maya takes over again. Oh, I've been here for 5 years. You know, I could have been making so much money. You can imagine the horror of that. But it can happen. That's due to offenses. But if we avoid those offenses, then Krishna gives us, you know, more and more nectar. You know, every single thing about Krishna consciousness becomes more and more tasty. And just the opposite, and I'll end with this because I guess we're getting a little late. I'm sorry. Is that by allowing your material desires to expand, that creates quarrel, right? But by development of Krishna consciousness, what is it? Swastasti visvasa kalak pasidadam dayantu yak. Yeah, shivam mitodhya. Shivam mitodhya means you think of each other's welfare. The mood of a healthy Krishna conscious society is that everyone is thinking of everyone else's welfare, spiritual and material. You know, what are devotees supposed to do when they get together? Glorify Krishna. Serve Krishna together. This is how you make friends, is you serve together. You know, you go through some austerity together for serving Krishna. It's like on the battlefield, anyone who's been in a war, you know, those buddies you made there, they're for life. You know, you save their life, they save your life, you know, you go through fire together. And that's a tremendous bond. So imagine how thick it is when you serve Krishna together. Kirtan, that's what kirtan is all about. You know, sand kirtan, together. You give each other strength. Just the opposite of Kali. Kali means fighting together for rare, you know, for sense gratification. There's never enough of it. But Krishna consciousness means you amplify each other's Krishna consciousness, and there's always a flood of it. There's never a shortage. The more you give it, the more you have it. That's spiritual. So that's what we should aim for. Okay, sorry to go over time. Oh my God. Any questions or comments on these few points? Balaram Das.
I just have a little comment. My Guru Maharaj was asking Prabhupada a question about envy. Mm. He was saying that, oh, Prabhupada, my envy is affecting my relationship with devotees and it's affecting my chanting, and can you please help me if it's affecting me in a bad way? And then Prabhupada said, well, this envy, what does it mean? Like, why do you want to be envious of somebody? And then my Guru Maharaj was saying, oh, because this reason, that reason. And then Prabhupada said, envy means you don't like someone. That's what it means. You just don't like someone.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, did this envy shouldn't be geared towards devotees? Like, means you don't like a certain devotee for some reason or another. But it should be geared towards the demons. Like, they're destroying the world. They're, you know, in other words, mm-hmm. to kind of, instead of that not liking tendency going to devotees, go towards demons and try to, you know.
Yeah, you can use that, you know, for encouraging your preaching. This word envy is interesting because as an editor, you know, I contemplate the words of Srila Prabhupada. So just a final note. Envy, of course, has a common meaning in America. Right? In England, it has a broader meaning, and that is that they have something you want. Right? It's synonymous with jealousy. Right? Someone has something and you want it and you're envious of them. That's a meaning Prabhupada often uses. That meaning is used in his books. But envy and envious often mean exactly what you said, bearing malice toward. To hate somebody. You know, envy. That's why in the Krishna Bhagavad, you should not even envy an ant. Well, what does an ant have that I want? Nothing. But we should not, you know, be angry at an ant or, you know, and step on an ant. We should, you know, let him carry through. So what causes that? For someone who is Krishna conscious, which means tasting the nectar of Krishna consciousness, even a little bit, then that envy can't be there. Because you're already tasting, you know? Like if I see, you know, so many of my god brothers, they're doing such wonderful service, you know, Sivaram Swami and others, Bhakti Vikas Swami, preaching everywhere, writing books, you know. And what then you know, I think, oh, I can't do that. I haven't done that, you know. They have something I want. So immediately, you're trying to think of something wrong, right? Envious means you try to tear them down. Yeah, you know, he wrote so many books, but his spelling is off, you know, that thought comes to mind, which is very unhealthy. But I can honestly say, I just love to hear about, you know, Indrajumna Swami's exploits of preaching in Poland and everything and, you know, adventures. And Sivaram Swami building up Hungary and Bhaktivinoda Swami writing so many books. You know, I just think that's the greatest thing. You know? Now, why is that? Well, like, because, you know, I'm also chanting, I'm also appreciating, and it protects you. You know, it's kind of, the glorification of Krishna and his devotees protects you from envy entering your heart. That's really the antidote. If one becomes envious, it's a sign of spiritual disease, and we have to watch out for that, because from envy is going to come blasphemy, and from blasphemy, that's offense, big offense. You lose your taste somehow or other. It doesn't make sense living in the ashram anymore, and when you lose association, you know, you're helpless before Maya's wiles. So always stay tight with devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hari Bol.